You may be seated. We'll resume with our last case of the day, which is number 2213606, United States of America versus Jamaica Ivory Williams. Mr. Gonzalez?
Good morning. May it please the court. Manuel Gonzalez, Jr., on behalf of the defendant, Jamaica Ivory Williams, who is present in the audience. Your Honors, this case concerns what I would say is the school board of Broward County, the Department of Education, and grant money that went from the school board of Broward County to a company called AESC, the Advancement of Education and Scholars Corporation. Here and after, I'm going to refer to it as the Paramount Charter Schools, because that's where the money went to. Paramount Charter Schools, during the time of that they were in business, that Ms. Williams was associated, had anywhere from 150 to 250 students, and that was the purpose of the grant money, for there to be a charter school for that. Now, Ms. Williams was part of the governing board of the Paramount Charter Schools, and the crux of the issue here is that before they got off the ground, there was monies and expense that needed to take place in order to get the school running. Ms. Williams was part of that at no compensation whatsoever.
Where does the Range Rover fit into what the school needed?
Pardon me?
Where does the Range Rover fit into what the school needed?
The Range Rover fits into the Florida Scholars Corporation, which is another entity that I was going there in a second. Ms. Williams, as on behalf of Paramount, the charter contract said you must disclose if you have a conflict of interest. Now, there was testimony from the auditor, Reynaldo Turnerman, that basically the audit reports that were provided to the school board from Paramount, because the money goes into Paramount, okay? They reported to the school board in their audits that Ms. Williams not only was a part of the governing board, but also part of the acting administrator. And there was testimony at the trial from ACD, which is the corporation that we argue the court improperly allowed evidence, because this case, as the indictment spells out in counts 1 and 2, it's talking about the advancement of education scholars, which is Paramount School, charter school. And it's talking about monies going from the school board into that account, and then later on that money went to the Florida Scholars, which is where Your Honor asked about where the Range Rover comes in. That's a separate company. That company was a vendor, okay? Now, Mr. Morley, who was for ACD, Mr. Morley became, and his company, ACD, which is not mentioned in the indictment, became the whole focus of the government's case. And in closing argument, the government prosecutor continually went into the fact that ACD was also a victim in this case. First of all, ACD was not an agent of Paramount Charter School, okay, which the statute 666, it talks about you have to be an agent of. So the only person that could be an agent of Paramount Charter would have been Miss Williams.
Are you making an argument right now involving ACD about the constructive amendment? part?
The constructive amendment and the fact that the court allowed it, even over objection of counsel, to come in. Counsel initially argued that this was improper 40B. The government responded, no, it was strictly intertwined, and the court allowed it at so.
So, and I guess that's my question, is why isn't the admission of evidence of your client's misrepresentations and bad conduct involving ACD, why isn't that evidence intrinsic to the charged scheme to defraud?
Because for several reasons. One is, with regards to clearly count one and two, ACD had no proprietary stake in Paramount. The government, in closing, argued that basically that ACD was part of Paramount, but that was not the testimony of ACD's representative and president, Mr. Morley, who said that his company was basically the landlord and the lender that invested money into Paramount Charter Schools. His testimony was that what he saw here was mismanagement on the part of Paramount Charter and Ms. Williams. Now, he enacted on behalf of his company a civil lawsuit trying to collect for monies owed on the loan that were behind and also monies that were owned on the rent as a landlord. But there was no witness that came in to say that any of these 150 to 150 students were deprived of a good education, that their education lacked the quality, that there was transportation wasn't paid for the kids.
I want to make sure I'm understanding this argument. Yeah. Are you saying that even if your client took all the money that the government alleges, as long as the students weren't deprived of an education in some way, then there's no problem? That's what it sounds like, and I find that a very surprising argument.
What I'm saying is that's part of the equation in analyzing the case, because bottom line is that if Paramount Charter School is victimized, okay, then what evidence was there that someone, whether it be the school bus drivers, the teachers, the principal, all of them were paid? There's no issue about that. Now, what Ms. Williams argued in her case was that there was a waiver of the conflict of interest, because the 666 has the exception of if the conflict is disclosed. And that was disclosed, and it came out through the testimony of Reynaldo Turnerman that, in fact, on the document submitted to the school board, it listed her as a board member and also as an acting administrator.
Right, but if you indicate that you have a conflict of interest because you're both a board member and an acting administrator, does that mean that you can take whatever money you want from the school as long as the school still operates in some way?
No, what I'm saying is that the monies that went from the Paramount Charter School to Florida Scholars, that money was for services rendered by Ms. Williams.
Was there any evidence that the services were actually rendered? Like, for example, Paramount paid Florida Scholars for janitor services, busing, and catering. Was there any evidence in the record about whether those services were provided and to what extent?
There was testimony by Ms. Williams, and also the school principal did say that Ms. Williams did provide all of these other services.
And were there invoices matched up to the services in any way?
There were not invoices. This is also part of Ms. Williams being compensated for the monies when for 6-7 months she worked at fixing up the school, preparing the school, and never was compensated.
But isn't it that also true that the monies that she was taking were far in excess of what would be reasonable compensation if she were providing these services? And there's also a secondary argument that she would have been doing the jobs of 7 people had she been providing all of these services.
Right, but Mr. Morley testified that he tried to persuade her to get a management company or a manager in. And also the testimony was that someone in that capacity would earn several hundred thousand dollars. And this is the witness for the government from ACD. But the important thing with regards to the construction amendment is that became the entire focus of the case. The case became all about ACD and what Ms. Williams did not disclose to ACD, which Ms. Williams had no duty or responsibility. ACD is a separate entity. If anything, if you can argue that by not disclosing, you're deceiving, you're not, but here we're not talking about deceiving ACD, because ACD does not have a stake in the monies that was paid out by the Department of Education and the school board. So therefore, ACD had no reason to be told, hey, I'm also, you know, being compensated. That was not, that has nothing to do with the litigation. But that became
the
crux.
You acknowledge the indictment did expressly allege that the fraud involved her deceit of others. It didn't. It did name some victims, and it didn't name ACD, but it didn't need to name every single victim, right?
It said others, but if you look at the closing argument from the government, the rebuttal closing argument, they concede that the indictment maybe was not properly worded because they were identifying and arguing that ACD was a management company, not others. That's what, you know, a management company. However, what happened was that the testimony of Mr. Morley contradicted that, because Morley said that they were not a management company. So clearly, the closing argument of the government on 3, 4, 5 times in closing argument, which is document 135, harps on that. I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Scott Dion on behalf of the United States. When a defendant testifies in a fraud case to try to explain away her actions, she takes the risk that the jury will disbelieve her and, in fact, conclude the opposite is true. That's exactly what happened here. Jameika Williams took the stand, she testified, she tried to explain to the jury why this was all above board, and the jury simply didn't believe her. And that's in the face of the government's case as well. The government showed that this was a case about lie on top of lie on top of lie. From day one, she told Mark Morley, Dr. Montgomery, that she was a volunteer. She didn't disclose to her auditor, to Jody Perry from the school board, to Cherie Shannon, the consultant who helped open up the school. She didn't disclose that she had owned a vendor that was providing any services to the school. And also, these lies were compounded by other statements she was making to people outside of the scheme. So, for example, in her Range Rover application, she told, and this is on Government's Exhibit 37, she told the Range Rover dealership that she was senior management for Paramount, and she was making $480,000. So there's just lie on top of lie on top of lie here, and she was not credible, and the jury clearly did not believe her story. Now, I just want to talk briefly about the constructive amendment argument, and I think there's two ways that this can be disposed of, both of which have equal value. I think the first is that, like Judge Branch mentioned, in the indictment itself, we allege that her scheme involved deceiving others, and others could include, of course, ACD. But second, and of equal importance, ACD was a key part of her fraud. The idea here was to keep money coming in so that she could take it. And ACD floated her money from almost day one. In total, I think ACD floated or loaned about $700,000. And even as her scheme went on, I believe it's in December of 2015, and on from there, ACD was, or she was discussing with ACD loans for paying student, or I'm sorry, teacher salaries, and this was, the idea here was to just keep the school open so that she could, of course, continue taking money. I think her arguments on the sufficiency end of things are kind of boiled down into three claims with one sort of core theme. The idea here is that she's trying to say that she didn't embezzle or misapply the money because she, as the sole board member, gave herself permission to have this conflict or be a vendor of the school. I mean, that's first of all unbelievable on his face. And second of all, you know, if this was above board, she would actually have a existing board to help her approve of these expenditures. Of course, the evidence showed that she, when she did hire board members, they were students and they weren't involved in any of the board meetings. And in fact, the testimony showed that she used these board members to gain more financing from ACD. So for example, when she was getting the additional loans, she actually forged the signatures of her two student board members that were volunteering for Paramount. The second argument, and they're all related, is that this was somehow bona fide compensation that was paid in the ordinary course of business. And really, the answer to this is just asking questions why. If this were in the ordinary course of business, why wouldn't she, A, disclose this to the school board, B, disclose this to the principal, C, disclose this to her financier? And the answer is, of course, that this wasn't above board. It wasn't in the ordinary course of business, and this was just simply a way for her to take money from the school. Similarly, when she was reporting these payments to ACD, to her auditor, who in turn reported them to the school board, as was mentioned during the opening arguments here, she didn't label these payments as anything consistent. At first it was school administration, then it was instructional services, then it was instruction to pay Tina Davis. I mean, these were checks on government's exhibit 31B that are all written to Florida Educational Services Corporation, and she's reporting to her auditor that they're in fact written to somebody else. And so this, again, I don't want to get too repetitive here, but this was not illegitimate operation. The idea was to just take money for herself. She showed up to school on, you know, in the first month in a brand new $100,000 car. She signed a lease for a home that was $136,000 or so per year. As soon as the money came in, her goal was to take it for herself. If the court has any further questions, I'm happy to answer them. If not, we'll ask the court to affirm and we'll rest on our briefs.
Mr. Gonzalez, rebuttal.
Once again, with regards to the information on a loan for application on a vehicle, that is not indicative that the money was being stolen. That basically it may be a deception in order to get a loan, which I'm not saying that it's right, but many a people, I know it's wrong, exaggerate on applications when it is to either rent an apartment, buy a home, or things of that nature. So that has nothing to do with regards to the funds. And the ACD loans was monies that had nothing to do with the monies that came from the school board. That had nothing to do. The money that ACD entrusted to Paramount, it was done two ways. One was they either paid for some of the vendors themselves directly, and or they the monies were deposited in a totally separate account. If you look at counts 3 to 20, two banks are involved, SunTrust Bank and Wells Fargo. The monies, the loan from ACD had nothing to do with those accounts. It had to do with a BB&T account, and that's where monies were used to pay vendors and other things. The money that went to Florida Scholars came from Paramount, and it had nothing to do with ACD. However, once again, ACD became not only the focal, but basically ACD was the victim in this case. It was not PCS. There was no testimony that, hey, PCS was victimized this way or not. It was basically testimony that ACD and Mr. Morley, his company, you know, had loaned and put money into this company and had not gotten the money back. And that created also a bit of the jury confusion with regards to the bona fide salary or not. There were several jury questions where they were asking the judge on two or three occasions, you know, can we consider the bona fide salary? So they were considering whether or not she did have, in fact, a legitimate salary. I have 12 minutes, I mean, 10 seconds by now. I'm done if the court has any questions for me.
Mr. Gonzalez, you were court appointed.
And yes, Your Honor.
Very much appreciate your discharging your responsibility so ably. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With that, court is adjourned.